adoption of that, that we get this advertised, these issues?
No. Chair, I suggested at the end of the discussion that you're going to have on copyright, we need to make that decision of things. So it's just a decision that needs to be taken by the committee.
All right. In that case, you will have to ensure that you have a quorum for it.
Okay. So, Chair, that then the committee then, if the quorum is a challenge, the committee can make a decision up front that at the end of the process they can do it, so we can make the decision now.
Well, there are lots of things. And nod. Can you put it on record, please?
The handcuff doesn't
capture. Chairperson, I propose that those decisions which the secretary of the committee is saying that we must adopt it, and we adopt it up front, because we know that we extended the scope and those things we're supposed to have a task that we get the permission from the House, that we continue with that.
Remember, this was raised by all members about advertising and the scope, because it had gone beyond the scope. Right. That being proposed, can we have a seconder? At the end of the bill, this will be done. Right? Honourable Tierko? What we're saying is that there were certain issues that we began to deal with that were outside the scope of the bill, and we had to advertise that. Now we need a formal position that needs to go to Parliament. So at the end, anything else that we say, look, that has got to be advertised, you need a committee decision on this, to go to Parliament to seek permission, as it were. So that's all it is. It's a technicality. We have got it proposed. You second it, Honourable Kichmania?
Seconded.
Right. Okay. Now that's done and dusted. What else is there?
The second decision is whether at the end of the process the committee can submit the draft bill in its current form, notwithstanding the outstanding matters, to the technical panel for them to have to give input on the bill, so the committee, when they return, can consider those inputs. Thank you.
What that means is that what is being advertised, the technical panel won't see those submissions until afterwards. I hope I'm very clear there. But the permission is the technical panel requires about 3 weeks or something to unpack the bill. So the what I need here is someone to propose that we do give the bill in its current form at the end of this meeting to the technical panel for comment. Honourable Tierko?
Seconded.
Thank you. Yeah, I've moved here. Yes, seconded also.
Seconded by?
Kajali.
Unfortunately, I must get this on record.
Seconded.
Thank you, Honourable Kachadia, thank you. Mr. Hermans, is that everything? Technical?
That's everything that we need to that require a quorum, check.
Honourable Hadebe, I now need to leave to go down to that subpoena. I think that the chair of the subcommittee needs to stay where she can contribute, because the chair needs to chair the others. Honourable Hadebe?
Chairperson, let me go and fix up those things with the office of the chief first. I'll come back then. Please. Because we'll have a problem next week if we don't sort it now. Because programming is tomorrow, so it has to be sorted out.
Honourable Buyani, stand up and be a man now and come and take the chair. Now, why am I doing that? The reason is the subcommittee chair of the copyright needs to play a more active role and to be not concerned with what she wants to say, but rather concerned about what everyone else is contributing. Is that in order? Right. This is a rare occasion, and it is your I don't know what we say. You're certainly not a maiden. But here we are, your first occasion at chairing, and I wish you well. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We continue our meeting now. As a new driver, a new commander, a new captain in the ship, you must fasten your seat belt so that we are moving very quick. we now on the item considering of the CAB, Copyright Amendment Bill. We'll give it to the DDG, Dr. Masocha, to continue the research. Over to you, Dr. Masocha.
Thank you, Chair. Before I start, I would like to apologize because I'll be coughing and sneezing and everything while I'm on the mic, so never mind me. There's a bug that has caught me here. Last week, when we were engaging on the bill, the issue that was flagged was on the resale royalty rights. And we were deliberating about the liability, who should be liable. There was a perspective about the liability should be to the seller and the art markets professional, which are your businesses that are in the arts industry, your auctioneers, your traders, your galleries, but who are in the commercial space. And the DTI was of the view that the seller and the arts market professional should be jointly and severally liable for the royalty to the author, who's the artist. And there was another perspective that it should be only the seller who is liable. So we were in that debate about who should be liable, and then we said that we'll come back today to finalize on the matter and reach a resolution. And we reflected on it as a department and with a technical team, and we are still of the view that the art market professional and the seller should be together liable for the royalty. And we also say that even if the seller is the one who is bringing the matter, there should be the art market professional in the picture. And there was a concern about the private sales between individuals, Honorable Kachalia, and we are saying that this does not affect the private deals between individuals, it should be done via the arts market professionals. Meaning if I buy a picture, between if the seller and the buyer, they are private individual and there's no commercial element, it will not apply to the artistic, to the resale royalty rights. So we are emphasizing the commercial element to it, and we are also saying that we want the seller and the arts market professional to have a joint responsibility to the author. And the reason why they should be having an arrangement, preferably it should be contractual, but it should be behind the scenes. We want to ensure that the author is not prejudiced in this process. And we also looked at models like your Australia that looks into this, and there are other countries that also look at the jointly and severally liable. And we are of the view that the authors will benefit if we approach it from that perspective. And another thing about the seller, the seller can be a private individual, it can be a business like your art market professional. So we think that if we limit this only to the seller, it might become a bit cumbersome. So if you bring in the art market professionals, it could be easy to manage, especially from a collection management perspective, where you bring in your collection society to address the issues of the royalties. So it's something that we think will be more manageable. But there was a perspective from the other departments, particularly from the DAC, regarding the seller. So I think from our side, we think that it would be to the best benefit of the author if we make it the liability of both the art market professional and the seller combined to take that liability. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Dr. Masocha. Any view from the House? Honorable Albert, then followed by Kachale.
Thank you, Chair. I would just like to get clarity on the relationship between the seller and the arts market professional. Would it be obviously there would be a relationship between them, and they're both being held liable then for the royalty. So would that be a joint and or several liability, so that the author can choose who to hold liable, and then whoever is held liable will then have to take legal action against the other person, like almost in a partnership. I just want to make sure if it's going to, we're going to be using the same principles.
Thank you, Chair. I think this requires more clarity. If we're saying that the creator, the author, whatever, is due a proportion, some share in the royalty on resale, then the question is, two questions. Who's liable for payment for that resale? And secondly, on what basis? So on the question, on the first question as to who's liable, as the Honorable Albert's pointed out, currently it says that both the seller and the art market professional are jointly and severally liable. Now, and your, the TDG's statement saying that, referencing it around whether there's a commercial element or not, is pertinent here. Now, what does a commercial element mean? There is profit made on the sale. Is that a commercial element? Or are we talking about someone in the business of art sales, in which case it would be the art professional and not the seller, unless the seller was in the business of art sales. So that excludes a private person. So, but if a private person took a painting to an art professional and said, can you sell this for me? The art professional sells it. Now the art professional is embarking on a commercial exercise because they get commissions, shares, or whatever you call it, of the sale. So that portion needs to be dealt with in terms of royalty resale going back to the creator. But the profit made by the individual seller, I bought a painting, I give it to you as the art professional to sell, you sell it for, I bought it for 100, you sell it for 200, you take 10% commission of it, you give me 190 back. My 190 is my 190. That should not be, that should be inviolable if I'm an individual seller. The 10% can be dealt with. So what are you basing the royalty resale on in that instance? On the whole sum, on the increment, or on the commission? These issues need to be dealt with. And then just to say blanket coverage of that, that both the seller and the art professional have to be jointly and severally liable, is a problem for the seller if the seller is an individual person who is not a professional contracting in the arts market. I understand that if there's people are contracting in the arts market as professionals, it's a different story altogether, then that has to be dealt with separately. But we are lumping them all together, and it's an issue for the individual as opposed to the art market professional. That's why I would suggest that we separate the joint and severally liable, and we keep it for the art market professional, because they are, to use the DDG's words, embarking on a commercial element.
Any response, Dr. Masoch?
Thank you for those questions, and thank you, Chair. To respond to the liability, yes, Honorable Albert, it is jointly and severally liable. You can look at it as a partnership. I had a debate with my colleague, Dr. Ria, last week about what is the best example for jointly and severally liable. And I was saying that it may not be the appropriate example for here, but marriage is a typical example of that. And using the example of the in-community of property, where two people are liable and they are seen as one person, but they both take responsibility for a particular activity. So we are saying that jointly and severally liable. In terms of the arrangement, preferably through a contractual arrangement to ensure that there is that arrangement. And we also want to ensure that the author, at the end of the day, is not prejudiced. I hope that kind of clarifies it. And Honorable Kachalia, you are right about the commercial aspect of this. In terms of the bill, when we talk about commercial, we are talking about obtaining of direct economic advantage or financial gain in connection with a business or trade. So that is the context of the commercial. And the other nitty-gritties of what informs, let's say, the rate or the royalty itself. In the bill, in 7B, we are saying that the royalties in respect of these works shall be payable at the rate that is prescribed by the minister after consultation with the Minister of Arts and Culture. So that will be catered for in terms of the rate that will count in terms of the royalty rate. And yes, we are aware that the seller might be an individual, but the main emphasis is around the art market professional. So there must be in all the transactions, the art market professional must be involved. So that's the way that this model works. It works through the art market professional. So the seller might be an individual, but then it has to work in collaboration with the art market professional. And then the author does not have to be directly affected. They can have that arrangement, and then the author gets the royalty that is due to them. So I think the main area here is about the commercial aspect that comes with the art market professional. So meaning between the seller and the art market professional, the one who has more of an upper hand and guidance and leadership is the art market professional. So they can work together to come up with the best royalty for the author. Thank you.
A follow-up question, Honorable Kachal, then we'll need an assistant or a response from the DEC as well, the Art and Culture, after the Honorable Members, Honorable Teko.
Thank you, Chair. I think then, thank you for that response, DDG, but I think we need to go back and make it very clear that an individual seller who is not acting in a commercial capacity is protected. And by lumping them together as jointly and separately liable flies in the face of that protection. We have to be clear about that, because otherwise we're opening a door while we're trying to close the door on the one hand, we're opening a door on the other hand. We don't want to do that by saying they're protected and then they're jointly and severally liable. It doesn't make sense. And in terms of the rate for the art market professional who is embarking on resale, the rate payable to the creator, to the author, I have grave worries about that being left to be prescribed by the minister in consultation or after consultation with another minister. The rate cannot be left to the arbitrary whim of a minister. That rate needs to be determined on the basis of fairness and written into law in terms of how we see it going forward. And as I said previously, the things that need to be addressed is it on the entire sum, a percentage of? Is it on the commission? Is it on the increment, so-called profit? These are areas we have to apply our mind to. We can't just leave this open to the discretion of a minister in consultation with another minister. Thank you.
Honorable Teko.
Thanks, Chair. I remember last week we said we will need guidance from all of them, advocates. So how do we make sure that we don't the jointly thing, we separate it from the seller and the art market. Yes. So here, advocate, we said you'll advise us and you'll seek advice from the team to say how best can we deal with this. And unless the DG is representing the whole opinion of what we requested last week. And I was reading this article, I think I was going home, the body art battle, where who owns the copyright. If there's a the tattoo part, I don't know, you'll explain to me. Because it's very broad now to say who owns the, will it ever occur to you, a third party might be able to claim rights to your skin. And in the case of art has been leaked into your skin, tattooed might maybe in the case, who jointly, who are you going to say, whoever sold it, or I don't know what has happened. That's why I said the joint and several parties for it. We need to address it so that we don't create problems in moving forward. Now there's a question, who owns the tattoo? If I have a tattoo, and suppose it's copied the way it is, and it's on the, you said the professionals, then who must be jointly liable on that one, if it's there on the market?
Yeah, now over to you, Mr. Mbiwa from DEC, then the advocate.
Thank you, Chairperson, members of the committee. Perhaps maybe I should start clarifying the question of art galleries, art auctioners, and art dealers. That in most instances, they act as sellers, but at the same time, they act as agents. And in the first instance, when the art galleries and auctioners are acting as sellers, then obviously the implication is that they would have to take the liability of making the payment. But in the second instance, where they act as agent, you'll find that they make their income based on commission. And if our law would say they'll have to be responsible for the payment, I think it will create a difficult situation in that. Because they've made a commission, now they are also responsible for the payment of, or liable for the payment of the royalty. But if we are saying the seller is the one, because the seller is the one who is price sensitive, we're moving from the seller, is the one responsible, then when it comes to the level of the art auctioners and the like, it's the question of the liability of the management, not of the payment. It's only the management, where they could manage the data, provide the data to the collective society. So we're talking of the legal liability of payment and the legal liability of the management. I think we need to separate the two.
Thank you, Mr. Mbiva. What do you advocate, Vandermeer?
Thank you, Chief. I think it is quite necessary that we maybe start from the start, because we are using a lot of terminology and we're using it differently. First off, what we have is we have three parties involved in a transaction. We have an author. This is the person that we're giving a right now, saying the author has a right to a resale royalty, party one. Party two is the person who currently owns that artwork, that it must be a visual artwork, and that person now wants to sell that artwork. That's the second party involved. The third party involved could be an art house professional. And what we are proposing is that we define art house professional. So, I don't know if I've already inserted it, but it includes art galleries, auctions, etc. An auctioneer, auction house, owner or operator of an art gallery, owner or operator of a museum, art dealer, or person otherwise involved in the business of dealing in artworks. That's the first thing. The second thing then is we are saying that if there is a sale that is commercial in nature, so in other words, the seller will own, this clause will only be applicable to these three parties if there is a commercial resale, and we define commercial in our bill. Commercial in our bill is defined as the obtaining of direct economic advantage or financial gain in connection with a business or trade. So it is clearly only where it is in connection with a business or trade where the sale happens that this resale royalty will be applicable. So I think once we then have those three parties sorted out in our mind, the only transaction can be where there is a business or a trade involved. Then the rationale for talking about jointly and severally liable is that saying jointly and severally liable does not have anything to do with the seller and the art market professional. That is not to their benefit. Jointly and severally liable is to the benefit of the author, because it means that if the author goes, I'll give this example. If we take the words jointly and let me first start there. If the decision of this committee is that both the seller and the art market professional must be liable, and we don't say jointly and severally, what can happen in practice is the following. The author who has this right will go to the gallery and say, you've sold a painting of mine recently, and I'm entitled to resale royalty, but I haven't received anything yet. Can you tell me what's going on? And the art gallery can say, no, there's the agreement that I've got with the seller is that the seller will pay you. Then the author goes to the seller and says, you know, painting of mine has been sold by this art gallery, and they say that you will pay me. And the seller will say, no, the agreement is that the art gallery will pay you. And in the end, the poor author will have to take both of these parties to court in order to see who is now in fact liable, because he doesn't or she doesn't know what the agreement between them is, but both of them are liable. If we include the words jointly and severally, it means that he can stop at the art gallery and say, I'm not going anywhere. If you do not pay me, then I'm taking you to court. And you need to sort it out behind the scenes with the seller. It's not my problem. So jointly and severally is for the protection of the author only. That's what the rationale for that is. Whether art galleries and the seller should be liable, in the end, is going to be a policy decision. What we have looked at, the examples I was given from the UK and from Australia, both had the seller as well as the art market professional involved. And the rationale that was explained to me by the DDI is that if you simply leave it to the seller, your seller might be someone, it might be a person who has a small art gallery, and now the person who painted the painting can't find where in fact was this. You say it was in Paris. Is this Paris, France? Is it Paris, Free State? Where is this guy? But if it is an art gallery, that's much easier to find, because your auction house and those are more established. They have more of a presence in the market. If the committee decides, no, that is not the case, well, then we can relook at whether the art market professional should be involved. But that was the rationale that was given to me. So, in other words, again, to make it easier for the author to approach someone that would be reliable to give them to pay the royalty. So, the concern from the Department of Arts and Culture about the art market professional acting as an agent. Well, if the art market professional is employed as an agent, there will be some form of an agreement. If the law requires either the art market professional or the seller to pay a royalty, the art market professional, I cannot believe, will not include in the agency agreement that the monies that is received, X amount, will be retained in order to be paid over. So I do think that we need to also think about the fact that we are dealing here, we are in fact, by using the word commercial, excluding people who might not know. If I can call them the man on the street, we're excluding those people. I would not know how to do this. The people that are being targeted are people who deal with this. It's a business, it's a trade, it's an art market professional. They are in this industry. So they would know how this works. They would understand that the act has changed, and this is what is now required of them. So I cannot see that there would be an agency agreement that does not provide for that payment to be arranged. I would be amazed if there is a verbal agreement only, because it would involve a lot of money. On the one thing that Honorable Kachali has asked about, whether it should be on the profit or on the whole amount, as the bill currently reads, it will be on the full amount of resale. So I do think it is something that we need to maybe just make sure that is in fact the intention, and whether it should be on the difference between what the seller paid for it and what it is sold for now. That would also be a policy, but I do think that is a valid question and something that needs to be just thought of. I'm not saying that it shouldn't be on the full amount, but that is something that we need to think of.
Honorable Williams.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, the question was raised about tattoos. Now, I know this might sound a bit odd and peculiar, but there is an article here that talks about, for instance, they mentioned a film where a tattoo was shown in a movie, and then the tattoo artist sued the movie company, the movie producers. It was quite a famous movie. So we're just wondering about that, because the article, perhaps you should give the article to the law team so that it can read it, and then we can get some clarity on that, because we don't want loopholes like this. These things that we didn't think of, nobody thought about this, what about tattoos? But it's quite a biggie. Thank you.
Honorable Kachal.
Thank you, Chair. Through you, can I just speak clear? I understand the clarity from the advocate in that there are three elements: the author, the owner of the visual artwork who wants to sell it, and the art market professional. Now, my understanding, which we need to make crystal clear, is that the author is entitled to some sort of royalty on resale. That is clear. The owner of the artwork who wants to sell it, we need to make clear, is exempt from resale royalty if they are if they are acting in their own right and not operating commercially. And therefore, the art market professional is liable for a portion of the resale, and that then relates to on what basis, on the whole amount or on the commission, because you cannot have it on the whole amount, because then you are prejudicing the person down the line who's the seller, whom we're saying is exempt. And then If we're saying the art market professional is liable, as they should be, because they are acting commercially, and the seller only if he or she is operating commercially, because there are individuals who are not art market professionals who buy and sell on a regular basis and would be deemed to be operating commercially as a result. The revenue services will tax them accordingly if they are. So if they seem to be operating commercially, then they are jointly and severally liable. But if they are not operating commercially, then I don't believe that they should be jointly and severally liable. You cannot have someone who is not operating commercially to be jointly and severally liable, because you've exempted him in the first instance. You've said he's not acting commercially. And then, yes, I think you're right, we really need to look at the determination of the rate itself, where it sits and what should be right. And also, secondly, importantly, who gets to determine this rate, on what basis the is it ministerial discretion or not?
There's also clarity on the issue of tattoos. I think the DGI will take it on as well.
Honorable Chair, on the issue of the tattoo, without necessarily saying I'm responding to the specific question, a copyright is it's copyright when it's original and it's in writing, or it's appended somewhere. So meaning that art is copyright. You can classify it as copyright. But the case is very unique, and where we are now, it's not easy to just respond, because we'll need to study the dynamics of that particular issue. Maybe there was a contract, maybe there was an arrangement in terms of who owns what, even if it's in the other person's body. But I think it's something that we can come back with. I think we will not be able to give a proper response on that one, Chair, given we need to study the issue first to do that.
Honorable Tech.
Thanks, Chair. No, I'm happy with the response, because it doesn't
delay anything. All I can propose, they can go and refine it, refine everything that is going to address all the issues. I will give you the article. You look at it, the advocate will also look at it. Then together with the Department Arts and Culture, because I can see the views, you come up with something that will be able to address all the issues so that we don't open a loophole that is going to give us problems in the near future. So we'll just have to flag it, I think, Chair. Then we will, it doesn't disturb any progress of the bill or the processes that is unfolding now.
Yeah, there's a proposal here that we flag the issue that was flagged on Friday, also flagged it today, so that you, I don't know, let me hear from the DGI.
Chair, I think what Honorable Teko is advising, maybe instead of referring to it as a flag, it's something that we will go back and just check if there's a loophole within what we have, if there's something that must be tightened in the bill. But as for now, I think that because we don't know the extent and the nature of the case, so we would say that it's something that we'll look at in terms of are there loopholes currently with what we have. So that is noted, Honourable Member. We'll do that. And in terms of the concerns of Honourable Kachalia, maybe let me start with the rate. The rates that are prescribed by the minister or the ministers, they don't do them in isolation. For instance, in the credit legislation, these are extensive consultations with industry, with the other departments, and we put them out there in the public to get to the final requirements in terms of what would be best for the industry or for the particular group that the particular initiative is tailored for. But I do also agree that the issue of the amount is very important in terms of are we talking a full amount or are we talking an amount after commissions and other amounts have been taken into consideration. And I think some of the issues could also be addressed via the regulations, because we also want to strengthen the collection management or the issues around the regulations around the different works that we have in the bill. So I think it's a very important point, and I'm just thinking loudly here that maybe advocate will advise maybe a wording like profit, because profit is when you've deducted some things, and if it might apply in this particular instance, when you've taken into account the other amounts that might be involved, because the full amount may not necessarily be full once the arrangements have been taken into consideration. So we note what you're saying. It's important.
Yeah, that is the second question.
Since I've come onto this relatively recently, have we had submissions from art market professionals and gallery owners on this issue?
We actually did. I think, if I'm not mistaken, Vansa, I think it's one of them. We did get some advice around the resale royalty rates, and I think Professor Kajika also assisted. So we had some advice around how to improve this element in the bill, and some of the issues we've raised, we've taken them into consideration. But I think the specific practical issues that you are raising are very important, because when you talk about royalty, you need to know from which base you are starting from. So that one is something that we'll look at. Thank you.
Yeah, no, thanks. I think Honorable Teko has made a proposal that the two departments, maybe the DAC and also the DTI, they must go and check and close all the loopholes in the bill. Because in terms of what is here, the DAC is saying the seller and the DTI is selling the art, both the art and the seller. So I think we must at least come and polish the proposal here. There's an issue here of presentation. Yeah, the art market did make a presentation as the response.
and you can consult the department as well to give you further information on that note. If there's no any other hand, we're stepping off this item. We're jumping to, because here it's indicating the T and we've already had the T. So we're jumping straight to the briefing on the Performance Protection Amendment Bill and the leakage of the Copyright Amendment Bill.
Sorry, Chair, there was a, we were requested to also look at the issue around the collecting societies. I don't know if that, maybe if we, the decision is taken that we leave it and we move to the performance protection. We, CIPC was requested to apprise the committee on the collecting societies in terms of where the committee was and the work that was done before around the collecting societies.
Yeah, no problem. Apologies accepted here. Yeah? Because there's a presentation on the collecting society. If you can just zoom in here for 3 minutes, then we engage so that we quickly move to the other item. Are you ready? Thank you.
So what I would do, Chair, is maybe to speak. The presentation was circulated, and it highlights the importance of collecting societies. It talks to the ones we have in the country at the moment. So it's also talking to other countries what they have done concerning collecting societies. But in terms of the decisions that were taken in June this year, one of the decisions that the committee took was to change the one collecting society per set of rights to open it up to other collecting societies, meaning that we said we want to ensure that collecting societies, there are more collecting societies in the market, and to ensure that there's more inclusion. So that was a major decision that was taken. There was no legal opinion per se, but there was, we went back to check in terms of legal opinions around this area. We were just mainly presenting around which collecting societies are accredited, what are the dynamics in the collecting societies. So we then, with the discussions we had, we ended, the committee recommended that we change the one collecting society per set of rights. But then because the CIPC is in the coal phase of this work, they wrote to the chairperson of the portfolio committee to request that it be reversed so that we go back to the one collecting society per set of rights, because they're saying that when you have more than one collecting society, in one right, you then have a challenge of them taking each other to court and fighting over membership and things like that, which is also currently a situation we are having with the monies that were currently paid by the SABC, I think. So there are those challenges. So they were appealing that the committee could maybe reconsider bringing back the one collecting society per set of rights. And as a stakeholders, including retailers like your restaurants, they raised the same issue. So we thought that it should come back when we brief you in terms of where we really are. It was initially in the bill and then it was removed. And also there was an issue around the triple BEE that the collecting societies must apply, that they must comply with triple BEE. And the argument we're having was that these are not normal businesses with the criteria required for triple BEE, and we've put that in the bill right now to say they must comply with triple BEE. But then the request from CIPC is that maybe the committee to reconsider, because these are membership-based organizations and non-profit organizations, so the triple BEE element may not necessarily apply to them, because it's more about voluntary membership, people coming together. So it's those two areas around the triple BEE and the one collecting society per set of rights. So that's the main thing. Thank you.
Yeah, I saw a hand, Honorable Adebe.
Chairperson, I appreciate the input which is coming from the DDG. But if, as you can see now, the committee basically cannot take a decision around now, so we'll flag it for next week. But I think that the input she's making is going to be considered. I think it's good that she, the Intellectual Property Commission has written to the chairperson. I think we'll entertain it when we come back. Is it next week? The next meeting is when? Yeah, next week, Tuesday. Then.
Yeah, honorable members, there's a proposal that we entertain this matter on our next week meeting. Any seconder? Record?
No, Chair, thanks. We are seconding that we will deal with it next week. We have heard them. We will consider our decision. They will be next week because we are not correcting. We are only for here. I'm seconding. We are not correcting. Then we'll deal with it next week.
Okay. So the proposal is that we continue the proposal of the collecting society in terms of the decision. Because, yes, we understand that the CIPC has written the letter to the chair that we must take a decision. But now we can't take a decision around it. But for the sake of information, as an acting chair, I just wanted to check, man, because you indicated that you've got a lot of source collecting society, but none of them has been regulated. None of them report to the CIPC. So what are the issues around there? Are you going to put them in the bill, or what is going to happen? Because really, in South Africa, you cannot take monies from the membership. We are not regulated yourselves. Even if you can take that money and go away, because no one has registered to even the CIPC. Thanks. Over to you, Didier.
Thank you, Chair. Currently, we have two collecting societies that are accredited by the CIPC, and the others are not. But the intention of the legislation is to ensure that once we have the law in place, they will be required to be registered. I think in terms of the regulatory framework, they probably are registered entities, whether as NPOs. So they are registered, but they are not accredited by the CIPC. Because when you say an entity is not registered, but it's operational, it might have other connotations to it. But the accreditation is the issue, that because there will be requirements in terms of what they must meet. And I think also in the bill, we are making allowance. There's a transitional allowance to say that there will be a period that they're given to ensure they comply with the legislation. So it won't be an immediate proposal. So there will be time that they're given to ensure that they fall into the regulatory framework as per the new legislation.
Yeah, no, thank you. Are we in agreement? Then we zoom to the briefing on the Performance Protection Amendment Bill.
I keep interrupting you, Chair, with additional things. And there was a court judgment that we were requested to circulate to the committee. It was around the National Broadcasters Association and SAMPRA. They were querying the issue of the rate of royalty. And initially it was between the retailers and SAMPRA, and then the retailers were not happy with the outcome. It ended up being an appeal case in the Supreme Court. And the final conclusion of it was that the judge overturned the decision of the tribunal, and the rate was reduced to 3%. So that judgment came with the issue of the rate. There was no dispute around the royalties. It was about the formula that was used to come to the rate. So experts were interviewed, and then different issues came up, and it was found that one of the issues was around the jurisdiction of the tribunal to address the issue of the royalties and the dates they gave in terms of its enforcement. So it was just that case, talking to the formula of coming up with the royalty rate. And that was between SAMPRA and the Association of Broadcasters. So I thought I should just flag that we did look at it, we did bring it to the committee, it was circulated. I'm not sure if other members saw it, but yeah, we requested to talk to the judgment. So I thought I should just bring it up before moving to the Performance Protection Bill.
Yeah, there's an issue here, just for information, so that we, for that members must know that there's this judgment, and also if you need copies of that judgment, you can consult the office as well. That one is just for noting. Any other additional matter? Oh, okay. Art and culture, Mr. Mbiva.
Thank you, Chairperson, members of the committee. On the issue of one collecting society per set of rights, given that we reconsider it, I think in relation to that, what we might also look into is the question of the smaller collecting societies. In our experience, we have seen that in the question of economic of scale, you'll find that the smaller collecting societies are not managing their business properly when they are on their own. To an extent that you might have seen, there are other collecting societies in the country currently that are somehow under the bigger umbrella of the bigger collecting societies. So I was just raising this, that when we reconsider this matter, we should also, you know, look into the economic of scale to ensure that when we take a decision about one collecting society per set of rights, we ensure that we also look into the livelihood of those who will be collecting for a few stakeholders, for instance, in the visual arts and other sectors that are very, very, very small, that cannot on their own survive from the income that we'll be making. I think it should be looked into when we discuss this matter as well.
Okay. Noted. Any other additional matter, DDG, before we continue with the performance?
No, Chair. That's fine. Everything is covered.
Okay, let's continue.
Not additional, but just a format. We have a detailed presentation and we have a thinner presentation. I thought to do both because I know that there has been several briefings to the committee. So I just wanted guidance in terms of, do I do a detailed one or just go straight to the point with a shorter briefing?
I think that the shortest one is fine because we must be brief on this matter. Hence, I indicated earlier on that we must brief and be precise. Then the other document, maybe the thicker one, you can distribute to members so that for the information. But in terms of the presentation, you can present the shortest. That's the ruling.
So it was not additional, you see? Thank you very much. So this is we are here to brief the committee on the Performance Protection Amendment Bill and to highlight the linkages with the Copyright Amendment Bill. And briefly, we'll look at the challenges, the legal framework, and some few definitions, and talking to the neighboring rights, the international framework, and then looking at the relevant provisions in the Copyright Amendment Bill that aligns to the performance protection, and some other proposals that are coming from the from WIPO, World Intellectual Property Rights Organization. And this, I will summarize this. The main thrust of this is to ensure that the creative industry and performers, they receive their economic rights and other rights, for instance, the moral rights to their performances. We have a challenging situation in the country regarding the how performers receive economic benefits to their performances. In terms of their bargaining power, they come from a weaker bargaining position. and they are taken advantage of in many times in terms of how they are compensated and so on, whether it's from contractual point of view and so on. And the industry itself still has a long way to go in terms of issues of formalization, how to make the business model work within the creative industry, and the, as I mentioned, the issues around the abuses. Piracy and counterfeiting remains a challenge, although it's an enforcement issue, it remains a challenge. Issues of contracts are very significant, and there are those unfair contractual arrangements. And one of the major issues around the non-payment of royalties and also issues around the repeat fees. And as you, practical examples is if you go to airports, you'll see that there are these shows that are repeated, whether it's a drama that you know from the TV series, there's repeats of shows, and you'll find that even though their work is exposed, they're not receiving anything for that. There are TV channels that repeat certain shows from many years ago, the 80s and the 90s. The question is, are those artists receiving royalties for their works? So this is a practical issue that we all see every day in terms of how the creative industry, artists, performers are treated. And as a department, the issue around the ratification of the treaties is one of our priorities. The bill is informed by the international treaties like your Beijing treaty, and we it's a gap that I think we are currently trying to address to ensure that we ratify the relevant treaties. So the issue of the, and also the we think that the issue of reciprocity regarding the payment of royalties is also important for this work. And the issues of disputes also in terms of the mechanism to ensure that artists have a platform for dispute resolution is also critical. So there are all these challenges. I'm sure members can be reminded of a time when the Generations Actors, they were taken off the set because of their issues around wages and income and so on. So these are realities that our actors are facing on a day-to-day basis, and we are hoping that with this intervention of the bill, something will be done to address their plight. And then in terms of the legal framework we are coming from, we are talking to the Copyright Act of 1978 as well as the Performance Protection Act of 1967. And apparently when the 1967 Act was enacted, I think many of the things we have now were not in existence. So you can see it's quite old. So there's a need to ensure that it's aligned to the digital space. It also takes into account the developments that took place in the market and in the industry from that period to now, and to ensure that our artists are not left behind, they also benefit from those fruitful benefits. The eligible copyright works, we've listed most of them. The ones that the bill is more specific to is the sound recordings, which are fixated performance, and the cinematograph films, which are the fixated performances. So for sound recordings, you can think of, the common thing is a CD that is compressed that you can enjoy, that the performer has performed at a particular point but is fixated and we can listen to it all the time. And the cinematographer films, think about films or any TV related program. And I'm going to skip through the concepts here because we're trying to just explain what copyright is, what an author is, and with the copyright discussions, I don't think this part is still that necessary. But I'll move to slide 8, talking to the neighboring related rights. And because this bill is, it comes with neighboring or related rights, and these are the rights relating to performances. They are secondary rights in nature to copyright, as they are usually fixated in the sound or the audiovisual works, which are films. And we're also saying that copyright in a wider sense also includes other related rights. For performance, when you say performance, we're talking about actors, musicians, and dancers, and producers of phonograms. Maybe just to say what a phonogram is. A phonogram means exclusively oral fixation of sounds of a performance or of other sounds. So you fixate the sound, so you can think about something like a CD and then your broadcasting organizations. And once such performances are fixated in either sound or audiovisual works, the owner of sound recordings or films generally exercises the control over the work for that for commercial purposes. And the neighboring rights, they enjoy protection for a period of 50 years, and they include the rights to authorized fixation and the economic rights and the moral rights. I mentioned the treaties that this legislation addresses. One of them is the Rome Convention, which talks to the protection of performers, producers of phonographs, and broadcasting organizations. The WIPO Performances and Phonographs Treaties, which also addressed addresses rights like economic rights and moral rights, and the Beijing Treaty on the Protection of Audiovisual Performances. So we are aligning ourselves to these treaties, and they have been incorporated, informing some of the provisions in the amendment bill. So we are informed by the international legislation, also taking into account the digital elements that we need to bring into the creative industry and so on. And maybe before I talk to the cross-referencing provisions, I would like to indicate that this bill is I would like to call it a work in progress. There are technical issues that we have identified that must be noted. It's just to say that there will be work. We have identified that there are challenges with this, so we are saying it first before everyone else says it. So it's like a disclaimer. It's not there are this work that needs to be dealt with from a technical point of view. For instance, the issues that come from the IPLA, the Intellectual Property Law Amendment Act, they have not been, they are not incorporated here, and there are some definitions that are in the that law that are not not dealt with here, and there are other smaller technical things that we still need to address. So I call it a work in progress because we also did work with the Copyright Amendment Bill. So some of those things may also be applicable for the Performance Protection Bill. So it's something that I thought I should mention. For instance, we know that we have not ratified the treaties, and we are talking to the treaties. And so I think that these are some of the things that may come up in terms of, but then why, and why is this looking like this? So there are technical issues that we've identified that we will be sorting out as we move along through the committee process. So we are saying here that there is a need to cross-reference Section 8 of the and Section 9 of the Copyright Act. So the link here is between the Section 8 and 9 of the Copyright Amendment of the Copyright Act with the Section 5 of the Performance Protection Act. So there is that's where the linkages are between these sections. And we are saying that this will enable the committee to stipulate how the performers will exercise their right to authorize fixation of their performances, and also to assist the committee to pronounce how owners of sound recordings and films must share royalties on the use of sound recordings and their and films. And also this will introduce provisions that will establish collecting societies for Section 8 accordingly in the same manner as we did with Needle Time Rights introduced in 2002. So with this, we will we're bringing in more rights for those for the performers in the context of both the Performance Protection Act and the Copyright Act. So the sections are those ones noted there. And we are of the view that collective management in the audiovisual sector is very important in the same manner as it has been approached for Needle Time Rights in sound recordings, and also that Section 8 of the films will have to be amended to reflect the establishment of collecting societies. And also we want to ensure that there could be a pronouncement of how the right to authorize fixation of performance the right to share royalty will be managed in terms of films. And we are saying that for needle time rights, the legislature enacted Section 9A, establishing the collecting society, including the tariff setting. And so here we are also talking, we're talking more to the issue around the collecting societies and the importance of ensuring that we have this, and also an opportunity to incorporate the treaties also for our ratification processes. And with this slide, slide 12, is just to highlight certain new things that the discussions at WIPO. For instance, there's a discussion at WIPO on the need to grant the directors in theatrical productions the rights due to the art, skill, and effort put in directing theater productions. And we are saying that Russia introduced this topic at WIPO and has thus far requested a support from South Africa. And we are saying that if this topic gains support of WIPO member states and leads to a treaty, it will obviously be a neighboring related rights, so the rights of directors in theatrical productions. And we are also saying that there's a growing appetite to grant other role players in the post-production of audiovisual fixation the rights, like designers, makeup stylists, editors, meaning other role players in the setting of a particular work, whether it's a film or a sound recording, because there are many role players in the space. And so with the legislation, our performance protection amendment legislation, we will be dealing with the neighboring related rights, and we are saying that it must be carefully drafted to ensure that there are no ambiguities, and also talk to what I mentioned earlier to say that there are areas we've identified that we are still going to address in the bill, and that these rights cannot trump the primary copyright statute dealing with exclusive rights. So the rights that we are coming up with here will not affect the rights that are in the copyright legislation. And so we are saying that what we are proposing also is in line with best practices, and that we think that if we bring in the collecting societies and we identify, we take into account the rights that are brought in by the treaties, then we will have a very progressive legislation. And I, as I have mentioned, we are in the process of ratifying the treaties, and we are in discussions with this, with the DAC. And so far we did, there are certain steps we have moved through. For instance, the initial legal opinions have been sought. So that process is moving, and we'll expedite it to ensure that the bill has got that support of actual treaties that are on the ground. So I hope this was fast enough. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah. The presentation. Committee members, you want to engage? I'll start with Honorable Albert.
Thank you, Chair. You're too quick on me. I haven't formulated my question properly, so I have to think about it. This is an interesting move. I would just like to know the timeline on providing us a first draft bill on this that will give the linkages between the work we've done in the current Copyright Act and the this bill specifically that you are now working on. What the timeline of that more or less will be, and will this bring certainty? Well, this probably will bring certainty to the royalty issue, because I know in the previous Performance Act, or the, as the one stands as it is, provides for needle time, but it doesn't provide for audiovisual royalties explicitly, although they are legal opinions that say it can do that. And I know some artists have been successful in negotiating deals on that basis with the SABC, but they were not successful in doing it with the other two broadcasters. That's also commissioning work. And then just the last question. If work is commissioned, then a royalty will not be payable, I suppose, as far as neighboring rights are concerned as well. You can just clarify that. Thank you.
Honorable Ndebe.
Chairperson, first of all, I appreciate the input from the DTG, but I'll also lash in on what Honorable Alves has said on the issue of the timeline of the bill, because you must remember that we are having a parliament which is coming to its end. So if things are not done timeously, the bill might not see the light of day, because there are processes which must be followed. I think from the nature of this thing, it will also have to go to the National Council of Provinces. So we need a precise time when will it come back here. Because, Chairperson, what I'm worried with is the issue is that the performers are the ones who met the President, the former President of the Republic, about their exploitation. So I think that we must take that into consideration, that there are people out there who are already suffering because they have wrong contracts, they don't get royalties. As you said, you know, our Honorable Chairperson, no, when you go to YouTube, you look at the issue of the nickel time. I was last weekend, because Aretha Franklin has passed on, I went to YouTube and then on all her music, playing all her music, you find that sometimes, like the Bee Gees, the only one member is surviving, but their music is playing big time. By yesterday evening, there were 172 million views on the song of Bee Gees. How deep is your love? The issue is, is the foundation or the estate of those people benefiting from that? 172 million views in one day. I look at that one of Maryam Makeba, Pata Pata. I was listening to that. It was more than 7 million in a day, one day. So the issue of exploitation of our artists and then is very serious. So the issue of the timeline, I'm very concerned about that. When can we have this bill in place so that at least before we leave in October, we should have dealt with it. Thank you, Chief.
Yeah, DDG.
Chair, maybe let me clarify. There is a bill. There is a bill. Honourable Hadebe is there. I was just highlighting the same way we worked on the copyright. We are working on the copyright amendment bill, where there are certain things that are identified, and then we'll be clarifying them or cleaning as we move along. So I'm not clear about the timeline. I think I took it as this is going to be deliberated upon, and as we deliberate, we'll be identifying things and cleaning them as we go along. But then just to acknowledge that. So I don't know.
Yeah. Sorry, Honorable. I think Mr. Andre is assisting us.
Chair, just with respect to the programming, next week we're scheduling public hearings on the performance bill, and then the committee, if approved, will come back earlier than other members, and then we start with our deliberations. So there's a program that we will probably conclude this by the end of October if everything goes according to plan, but we never know. But there is a program scheduling the process regarding both the copyright and the performance protection bill.
The issues which you are raising about referring to the treaties which were not ratified by South Africa, will that not have an impact?
Chair, I think on this one, I would say not really. We adopt the treaties and then the principles that they espouse for the legislation, and we can implement them. But then I will request Dr. Ria just to elaborate a bit further on that part, just to give the certainty around the applications of the treaty. Doc.
Thank you, Dr. Masucha. Thank you, Chairperson, Honorable Members. Yes, indeed, we are working on a parallel process wherein we are facilitating to accede to, but also eventually to ratify the treaties. And with the bills that we have in place currently, both drafts, the copyright and the performance protection, we are trying to align them with the treaties. Basically, it says once we have enacted both the proposed legislation, they will be in harmony with the international legal prescripts. We try to also look at research, particularly the convention on the laws of treaties, the Vienna Convention, and it indeed allows us, once we have ratified the treaties or acceded to them, we have deposited an instrument with the Director General WIPO. It says we can just proceed and implement the treaty. So it says the better part of the process, really it will be left with us in Parliament as to how far we go with the bills. As long as we are able to incorporate the relevant provisions that are in the international laws, but on the other hand, we are working towards acceding but eventually ratifying the treaty. So that shouldn't be a problem.
Covered. Yeah. Dr. Masoj?
Okay. In terms of the inputs by Honorable Albert around the needle time and the royalties, the bill will seek to create clarity around the royalties and the payments of the performers. And around the one about commissioned works currently do not attract royalties. However, depending on the way the discussions, the deliberations go, I would not say definitely what will happen around that. But in terms of the copyright legislation currently, there's no royalties related to the commissioned works. But I think overall there is confidence, especially with the work that has been done also on the Copyright Act, that this will create more certainty for our performers. Thank you.
Yeah, Mr. Mbiva.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just to comment on the draft bill, and having noted the disclaimer from our colleagues, on three issues. One is the question of the definition of a performer in relation to, for instance, the Beijing Treaty. I noted that the definition excluded interpreter or interpret. And I'm just raising this, perhaps maybe it was by intention or by omission. Perhaps maybe we might need to look into that because it would have implications on the stakeholders themselves. The second thing that I wanted to highlight is the question of contracts. I think it was mentioned by also Honorable Harel in relation to the needle time issues. The implementation of needle time, it was somehow challenging, given that previously we did not have contracts amongst, for instance, the artists themselves. You'll find that when it comes to the payment of needle time royalties, the focus it will be on the major artist that has been performing in the song. If, for instance, Welaki was performing and the song was recorded 20 years ago, only Welaki will be known in the song, but the other performers won't be known. And we find that our legislation is not kind of like protecting or giving a provision for contracts to be renegotiated so that all people could actually be compensated fairly. I think that needs to be addressed perhaps moving forward. The third issue is the question of ambiguities in relation to the entitlement of the royalties, where you find the legislation will talk about the producer as the one who should receive the royalties. And to an extent that during the nil time, during the implementation of the nil time, producers of sound recording took advantage of that to the disadvantage of the performers themselves, whereas the Act itself was also to protect the performers. I think when it comes to that, we need to be clear as to who should first receive the royalties, so that there should be that balance. Producers should not go forth and claim that they can receive the royalties and share, after that share with the performers. But the collecting society for that kind of royalty should be for both the performer and the producer, so that there could be that balance.
Yeah. Thanks, Mr. Mbiva. You wanted to respond, did you?
I think in terms of the definition issue that he has noted, it's part of what I said, Chair, that there are definitional issues. For example, some of them also go to the IPLA legislation in terms of alignment. There is a need for that. The issues he's raising, which are welcome, is around how to strengthen our legislation. And I think it's important that we ensure our performance, they benefit, even those who support them. So it's in the committee's hands now in terms of how best do we address these things to ensure a very certain and a balanced legislation going forward. So I take them as comments that are strengthening the process. And we are also in support of anything that we need to bring up to sort this out. On the technical issues, for instance, there are certain definitions that they are listed, but they are not used in the bill, for example. So we acknowledge that there are those issues, but then the focus should be on how to strengthen the bill going forward. Thank you.
Yeah, focus is how to strengthen the bill, hence the reviewer. Are we done now with the presentation and the clarity-seeking questions, responses? Let me take this opportunity and thank you, the DTI, the DAC, all the departments, there are no names here, but all of you have been acknowledged for you to come and present here and to be part of this PC. And also a special thanks to the members for participating. Yeah, hence I was given an opportunity now to share a bit. Yeah, I acknowledge that as well. You wanted to say something before I close?
Your chairing was very good. That's why the meeting is so quick.
You must nominate me next time, okay? So that you'll be quiet. The meeting stands at 10. Thank you very much. Cool. Executive.